Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. In today's show, we talk to Major John Dotter from the University of Minnesota about ROTC opportunities, and we take a look at World War II History Roundtable with Dennis Showalter of Colorado College. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
With the recent passing of Hmong General Vang Pao in Fresno, California on January 6th, I wanted to take a moment and offer condolences to members of Minnesota's Hmong community and acknowledge the important contributions of General Pao and his Laotian Special Guerrilla units during the Vietnam War. Those of us in the Minnesota National Guard are inspired by the bravery, heroism, and patriotism of General Pao's Laotian Special Guerrilla Units, or SGU. For those of you not familiar with the SGU, they forged an alliance with the United States, and under the leadership of General Vang Pao, enabled the United States to have military victories against the North Vietnamese from 1961 through 1975. The SGU's exploits in combat were astonishing and are still talked about by those of us in the U.S. military. From a purely logistics point of view, the SGU's ability to move personnel, cargo, repair parts, and supplies simply defied all established precedent. General Pao's forces did what people said could not be done. My colleagues in the Air Force especially admire the SGU's ability to find and rescue downed American pilots. The pursuit of freedom and democracy came at a high cost for General Pao and his forces. More than 35,000 SGU were killed, and many more were imprisoned in communist prison camps. The end of the war brought more heartbreak, with the withdrawal of U.S. forces, infrastructure, and support. But General Powell persevered and was able to lead former SGU members and their families as they refocused their efforts to escape communist Laos. It is important that the Hmong community know that your collective love of freedom prevails, and General Powell's legacy lives on. The late general is not without controversy, but today there are hundreds of Hmong and Lao soldiers who have been inspired to serve in the U.S. military because of General Powell's example, many of whom I have the honor to serve with in the Minnesota National Guard. These citizen soldiers and airmen of Lao and Hmong descent continue the tradition of fighting for freedom and democracy. In conclusion, I again wish to express my condolences to Minnesota's Hmong community on the occasion of General Powell's passing.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. This week, Major John Dotter joins us. He is the Assistant Professor of Military Science at the University of Minnesota and involved in the ROTC program. Major Dotter, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you very much.
Major, we were talking earlier before we went on the air about your military service. I understand you've been in the military for 22 years?
Yes, sir.
And Major, you've been deployed several times. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. My first deployment would have been the post-original Desert Storm. We went down to secure the Kuwait-Iraqi border after the ground warfare had finished. Done initial sweeping of the desert to pull out any ruined vehicles and basically reestablish, help the Kuwaiti government reestablish control of their land and their people.
And then you had another deployment after that?
Deployed with the Minnesota National Guard to Bosnia-Herzegovina with Stabilization Force 14.
And I understand you just came back recently from the 34th Infantry, and you received a Navy Unit Commendation. How did that happen?
I was assigned to 2nd Battalion, 136th Infantry Battalion, a combined arms battalion in the Minnesota Army National Guard. And we were assigned to Multinational Force West, the west central region of Iraq. And we were under the control of the United States Marine Corps. So while doing my duties there, I received the Navy Achievement Medal, and the unit also received the Navy Commendation Medal.
And you worked with members of quite a few of the services while you were there.
Almost every branch of the service while we were there.
Good experience.
Definitely.
And I would guess that experience follows over to what you're doing at the University of Minnesota as the Assistant Professor of Military Science.
Yes, it's really unique that the ROTC program on the University of Minnesota has the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, and Marine Corps all represented on campus.
And your position and what do you do at the university to help with the ROTC program?
I'm specifically the recruiter there. I work with the enrollment and scholarship. So I seek potential ROTC cadets for the program. I get them enrolled in the courses, and if they need or want scholarships, I help them with that process.
And can you explain to our listeners what is the ROTC program and what do you get and what are the obligations?
Sure. When you're a student at a university and you have desire to serve the military, potentially through the ROTC program, no matter what your degree is, you take an additional series of elective courses, depending on how many years you want to be into or belong with the ROTC program. We get you enrolled as a freshman if you want to be with the program for 4 years. It is designed as a 4-year program. You'll take military science courses and also some leadership lab courses throughout your freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior years.
And there are benefits and obligations associated with an ROTC program.
Definitely. As an ROTC cadet, you will receive a monthly stipend. For a freshman, it's $300 a month. It increases with which each year of your college. Seniors receive $500 a month to cover additional expenses such as books, etc. We can also support them with the scholarships for their program.
Major, you told me that there was a program with the Minnesota National Guard where they can serve in the Guard and also be a part of the ROTC?
Correct. That's called the Simultaneous Membership Program, of which they can enlist in the Minnesota Army National Guard and be a member of the ROTC program. They would be assigned to a unit within the Army National Guard, drill with that unit 1 weekend a month, and conduct annual training with them, which is a 2-week obligation. They could also continue their education in whatever degree they're seeking and be a cadet. Once they sign with the ROTC program, they become a cadet and they would be shadowing a platoon leader of that assigned unit with the Minnesota National Guard.
So once they sign up for the and are accepted the ROTC program, the benefits are basically education gets paid for.
Sure.
The obligation is some period of time they have to serve.
Definitely. And depending on how long they enlisted for, how long they've already served, they will have a military obligation after they get commissioned.
Now, Major, while they're going to school for that 4 years and going to these special courses, are there any drills? Are there any? Do they interact with the National Guard troops or any other active duty troops?
Well, if they're simultaneous membership program cadets, they will be dealing with their assigned National Guard unit. If they're a traditional cadet, they will primarily be working with the cadre on campus. Through field training exercises, leadership labs, and their military science courses.
We'll continue with our conversation with Major John Dotterer after a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. To the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Today we're talking with Major John Dotterer, the Assistant Professor of Military Science at the University of Minnesota. Major, we've been talking about the ROTC program and some of the background of it. Can you tell me what kind of qualifications does an individual need to join the ROTC program?
The primary thing we look for, specifically in our high school students that are looking to attend the ROTC program, is a scholar, athlete, and leader, the three primary things we look at. We want to look at their GPA in high school, or if they have any college credits under their belt, what their GPA at that collegiate level is. Were they involved in athletic sports? Were they a captain of the football team? Or were they also, when we look at leadership, were they a member of a debate team or some other form of leadership role or an organization that they took charge of?
Now, the University of Minnesota campus, pretty good-sized campus. How visible are you, and how do you recruit these candidates?
We are a very large campus, and with all of the affiliate schools that assist the University of Minnesota Army ROTC program, we go out to all of these schools. We participate in their sporting activities. Sometimes we do color guards. We try to get out and advertise to the best of our ability to ensure all of the students on campus know that we're available for them.
Now, does the ROTC produce officers for all branches?
The ROTC program on the University of Minnesota does have Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine there.
And the officers that join the officer corps, I understand there's a good percentage of them that come from the ROTC program.
Definitely. Our mix right now is over one-third of the officers we produce are National Guard officers. We do also fill officers for the Army Reserve and for the active duty component.
Do you believe, and I'm guessing you do, but do you believe that the ROTC program gives them an advantage or an edge as they become officers?
I think it does. Definitely in the military side and the civilian side. We provide the cadets with the leadership skills that are definitely marketable and something that a civilian employer will look for if they're going to be a National Guard or Reserve soldier that will have an additional civilian career.
Major, I understand the ROTC program has been around for a long time.
Very long time.
Goes back, according to my briefing papers, to 1862.
Yes, indeed, right after the Civil War or during the Civil War.
And, Major, under the current law, I understand there are three types of ROTC programs that are administered. Can you walk us through those?
The ROTC program, well, the ways to create officers, I guess, would be a better way to start. We've got the military academies like West Point. You've got the ROTC programs at the university level that actually produce officers. And then we've got a junior ROTC program that's more at the high school level that prepares them for a university.
So there's three ways to get involved in the ROTC program. And the second one, of course, the civilian colleges is the one you're involved in at the University of Minnesota.
Yes, indeed.
Major, can you tell me what's the difference between a day in the life of a student in the ROTC program at the university as opposed to one that's not? How's it different?
Our cadets that are enrolled in the program are required to conduct physical fitness training with us 3 days a week from 6:30 in the morning to 7:30 in the morning. They're required to take additional elective courses besides their undergraduate degree that they may be seeking. We'll have them take military science courses, and then we'll also have them take leadership labs.
So what's a typical day like then? What time does it start and what time does it end?
They have to report to the armory at 6 o'clock in the morning for physical fitness training. We'll conduct an hour of physical fitness training, which will be push-ups, sit-ups, running, different activities. And then they'll go into their military science class, which will be an hour-long class right there at the armory. And then they'll go on with the rest of their student day, whatever sort of courses they may have for their graduate program, or if they don't have any classes that day, maybe head off to work.
Do your cadets get an opportunity to tour Camp Ripley and go out to the airport and see some of the facilities and so forth?
For our field training exercises, we conduct that at Arden Hills Training Area and also up at Camp Ripley.
Can you give us an example of some of those field trips? Is that what you call them?
Field training exercises. Yes, we when we go up to Camp Ripley, we'll take them out, teach them orienteering or land navigation. We'll take them through the confidence course, obstacle courses, give them training in marksmanship, and take them out to a rifle range and actually qualify with a weapon.
And how often do you take those kind of trips?
Once per semester.
Once per semester. Did they get an opportunity to do anything in the summertime? The ones that are in the Guard obviously do, 2 weeks.
Sure. In addition to the National Guard members, we have reserve and active duty folks, and we also give them the opportunity to go to active duty schools such as Airborne School, Air Assault School, Northern Warfare.
So during the course of their 4 years in the ROTC program, they get to interact with Guard forces and active duty forces quite a bit.
Definitely.
That must give them an edge when they finally graduate and get ready to serve their duty.
It gives them a good perspective of what the active duty Guard and Reserve is and which direction is the way they want to go.
Are they required to finish this in 4 years?
They are required. Well, there is exceptions to that. Some of our nursing candidates or some specialized degrees may get some extensions to that. But yes, primarily it's a four-year degree program.
So they take a full load of classes and try to finish on time.
Exactly.
The major, when they graduate, what can they expect? What happens next when it comes time to pay the bills, so to speak?
There is a military obligation that comes with serving. They will either have, depending on how they came into the program, depends on the length of time they will have to serve, and if they are an active duty officer, a National Guard, or reserve officer. So there's a different way to answer it depending on which path they choose.
So once they graduate from the ROTC program, do they have to... You know, when I was in the Air Force in Vietnam, we had to go to basic training, and then we went to tech school and all those things. Do they actually go off to OTS, or what do they do?
They will go off to their basic course. They'll pick a specialty within the Army, and they'll go to that course. And then after that, they'll be qualified to conduct their job.
And then they're active duty guard, reserve, or active duty for a period of?
Correct. Typically 4 years, with a total obligation of 8 years.
Total obligation of 8 years. So, Major, we're just about out of time. Do you were you an ROTC cadet?
No, I was an officer candidate school product.
And how would you rate the difference? Are they equal? Are they just two different paths to the same place?
It's two different paths to the same end state.
Major, for all of our listeners that are out there that might be interested in ROTC, how do they contact you? How do they...
There's a wide variety of ways. They can either go to goarmy.com, or they could go to the University of Minnesota Army ROTC Facebook page, or they could go online and just Google Army ROTC.
And you're on campus and ready, willing, and able to talk to them.
Anytime.
Major, you're doing a great job. Thanks for joining us today.
I appreciate the time.
That was Major John Daughter, Assistant Professor of Military Science at the University of Minnesota. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Each week, we feature Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. Recently, a metropolitan company called our friends at Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, saying that they wanted to close for one day so all 15 of their employees could work together on a service project for a military family. But they didn't know how to contact and find a military family to support. Quickly, they learned that with the Family Assistance Center near the office, they had a list of families looking for an additional hand with snow removal. One family needed their kitchen repainted, and another military mom whose husband was deployed was looking for a safe child care for her children for an afternoon. In the same week, a medium-sized Minnesota company called to find out how they could get their five franchises scattered throughout the state to work together to support military families. Thanks to Beyond the Yellow Ribbon website, they were informed about several nonprofit organizations across the state that they could donate to, send care packages through, or even volunteer their time with. Thank you, Minnesota businesses, for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring our service members all the way home. To learn how you can make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. When we return, we'll take a look at World War II history roundtables and the war on the Eastern Front with Dr. Dennis Showalter. That's next right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Deputy Commissioner Gil Acevedo.
The Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs welcomes incoming retired Lieutenant General Larry Shelato. General Shelato recently retired as the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. General Shelato is widely regarded as a strong and dynamic leader who is respected for his dedication to our nation's servicemen and women. During his 7 years at the helm of the Minnesota National Guard, General Shalitoe helped build a national reputation for the Guard. He was instrumental in establishing the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, a project on which he worked cooperatively and closely with then United States Senator Dayton. As Commissioner of the Department of Veteran Affairs, General Shalitoe's years of experience and leadership will ensure the agency is both innovative and responsive to the needs of our veterans and their families. Today, I want to focus on our staff and volunteers. They are the reason we are successful as a department. Here are a few examples. The United States Department of Veteran Affairs recently sent out an annual survey team to the Hastings Veterans Home. I am proud to report that the survey team came back with zero findings, which means that the Hastings staff and facility received a perfect score. This is a rare and certainly a huge accomplishment. The team at the Hastings Veterans Home has worked incredibly hard, and I am pleased to see their dedication and focus on quality care rewarded. Our team at the State Approving Agency also experienced a recent success by achieving the highest rating assessment by the VA for 2010. Minnesota Veterans Homes received best-in-class rating in several categories through Pinnacle Consulting in 2010. In addition to our talented and highly trained staff in all divisions of the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, the Minnesota Veterans Homes in particular have a dedicated group of individuals who willingly give their time to enhance the quality of life of our residents. I am talking about our volunteers, who range from children, community members, family members, to organized veterans groups. Last year, volunteers provided 68,000 hours of time among our five veterans homes. Volunteers do a variety of things at our Minnesota Veterans Home, from helping with recreational events, outings, medical appointments, shopping, office work, sewing, entertainment, and much more. Volunteers change lives with their time they invest. They put others first in everything they do. I also want to thank sponsors who have made generous donations. Last year, the Veterans Homes received more than $800,000 in total donations. For those who are volunteers or who have shown financial support, thank you for being a part of our team. Together, we can improve the lives of Minnesota's heroes. To volunteer or learn how you can help, visit us on the web at minnesotaveteran.org or contact a state veterans home in your area.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Acevedo. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs by calling 1-888-LINK-VET or online at minnesotaveteran.org. This week, Dr. Dennis Showalter joins us. He's professor of history at Colorado College, a University of Minnesota and St. John's alumni, in town for a World War II roundtable event at historic Fort Snelling. Professor Showalter, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you.
Professor, you've got some longstanding contacts with Minnesota. You're a St. John's University graduate?
Yes, sir. Born in Delano, just 30 miles east of the Twin Cities, and have my PhD from the University of Minnesota. And I would say as well, most of the qualities I have as a student in history and a military historian, I got from the U and from my two mentors, Otto Flanda, who was my dissertation advisor, and Hal Deutsch, who was not merely a mentor, but the kind of person and historian I wanted to be when I grew up. And I still feel that way.
That's great, sir.
I still feel that way.
Now, how did you get involved in or interested in studying the era of World War II?
My first memory is of a bonfire in the town square celebrating VJ Day in 1945. And in that sense, I came by it almost naturally. I was 8 when the Korean War started, was followed that in the newspapers and magazines, you know, Life magazine and such, and then began working backwards into the Second World War. It was an interest of mine, you know, through college, and then as a graduate student, I was able, again, working particularly with Dr. Flanza, Dr. Deutsch, and the rest of the history department then. Well, what they taught me to do, encouraged me to do, was broaden my perspectives, stretch my capacities, and take intellectual risks at a time when micro-specialization has become the rule in academics generally. That Minnesota training is among the best things I have going for me.
So, Professor, you really grew up in those times and were interested in it as you were growing up. And I note that you've published a number of books.
I've been lucky in that respect, yes.
My research says something like 14 books published and more coming, and many, many articles published and more of those coming. You've been busy.
Well, I believe one of those who believes teaching and research work hand in hand, even in a liberal arts college. And the Internet has been a big help with that. Electronic communications, improved interlibrary loan facilities. Starting out in 1969, it was a real challenge simply because you were isolated. Well, these days, with world connections, just about anyone who wishes can be an active scholar and an active writer as well in the general audience works like Military History, World War II, MHQ, Military History Quarterly, The Slicks. And one of the strengths of military history, I think, is that this is what many of us do. We try to maintain a link between the academic world, which always tends a bit towards esoterica, and the general audience of people who are interested and who are often very, very knowledgeable. That is why things like the Harold C. Deutsch World War II Roundtable is valuable, and for me, it's important enough that I'll come up here every year I get a chance I get in the middle of a Minnesota winter to participate in the roundtable.
Professor, this isn't your favorite time of year to visit Delano?
It is not. I grew up shoveling snow, and in Colorado Springs, snow melts within three or four days, and I watch it from my window, and I laugh.
All right, Professor. I note on your published books, you've got books on Hitler's Panzers, Patton and Rommel, Hindenburg. How have you done your research over the years on all of these topics and all this information on World War II?
Partly, I've had, again, a lot of help, a lot of support, a lot of colleagues who do research and share. Partly, I've been able to take advantage, as I said, of the opportunities to do archival and archival research, and I try to read about a book a day, university type book a day, a couple 300 pages when I'm going well. Now there's a certain flannel mouthing in that. Things don't always go that well, but that's my job. That's what Colorado College pays me to do, and in a very real sense, I think that's what my mentors at the university taught me how to do. If nothing else, we had the training, but we also had what you might call the Minnesota work ethic.
Yes, sir. Now, you're in town for the World War II roundtable.
That's correct.
And what's when is that, and what's the topic of it this year?
Well, the Harold Deutsch roundtable started in 1987, so it's a quarter century old and flourishing, and it meets 7 p.m. At the Fort Snelling History Center auditorium on the second Thursday of each month, September to May. It's the largest program of its kind in the world, regularly draws up to 500 people. And again, it's the sort of audience, the sort of venue that is attractive to any of us working in the field of military history, particularly in the field of World War II. As I say, sometimes speakers like me don't correct, let's say, the History Channel, but we do complement it. We do balance. I do think we balance it, supplement it. And that is what the World War II roundtable here in the Twin Cities does.
And, Professor, what's the general theme of this year's program?
Well, the theme, there is no central theme, but it is true that every January, for several years, they've done something on the Russian front, beginning with Barbarossa, then the winter campaign, 1941-42, through Stalingrad, Kursk, and now tonight I'm going to be dealing with what the Germans call the forgotten year, 1943-1944, from Operation Kursk, Operation Citadel at Kursk, to Operation Bagration in June of 1944.
Professor, why do they refer to that as the forgotten year?
Because it's the year that had nothing spectacular in it from the German side. and until very recently, World War II in the East was told almost entirely from a German perspective. Russian sources were lacking. Many of those that existed were suspect. Russian veterans were largely silenced. Well, all of those things have changed since the fall of the Soviet Union, and the study of history of the Eastern Front has benefited from it. 1943-44 might have been the forgotten year to the Germans, but in a very real sense, it was the year in which the Red Army of the Soviet Union came of age. You might say that Stalingrad was the homecoming dance, Kursk was the senior prom, and after that, you could speak of a movement towards graduation in some of the hard fighting, when the odds were relatively even, that set up 1944 and the Red Army's gigantic offensives into Central Europe, into Germany, that wound up with the hammer and sickle being raised over the Reichstag and thousands of Russian soldiers signing their names. They had their own versions of Kilroy was here.
Thank you, Professor. We have to take a short break, but we'll be back to talk with you more about the roundtables, and we'll continue our conversation with Professor Dennis Showalter after this short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Today we're talking with Professor Dennis Showalter, a professor of history at Colorado College. Professor, I believe that this roundtable that you're in town for is happening now, so by the time the listeners hear us, it will have been over. But we'll provide some information for our listeners on our website, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, so that they can go in and they can listen to what happens. But Can you tell me how this roundtable works? Are you the expert that comes in?
The way it works is that the roundtable, as a general rule, brings in one outside expert. And, of course, you know the definition of an expert is a jerk with a briefcase who's more than 50 miles from home. And I can show you my return stub to Colorado Springs.
But Delano isn't that far away, sir.
We're the focus of it. And then a panel of veterans or people with other kinds of direct experience will provide the firsthand discussion. And the speaker and the panel are complimentary, and the questions and very often the grilling will come from an audience that is very knowledgeable.
So you may
in
have
these
some,
areas.
You may have some World War II veterans that actually experienced this portion.
You will have veterans. You will have people who are interested in something, buffs and hobbyists, particularly as the war goes on. You'll have individuals who were refugees from Eastern Europe towards the end of the war. Every now and then there will be people who were part of either the concentration camp system or the forced labor system. And again, you have people who are, this is after all Minnesota, and you have people who are extremely well read in the field, extremely knowledgeable. And I would say that I've had at least as strenuous an intellectual workout from this roundtable than I've had in many a group where every participant had an assortment of letters after their name.
You look like you're looking forward to it, sir.
Very much so.
Your general theme we touched on earlier tonight is the Eastern Front during World War II, and we talked a little bit about the forgotten year on the Russian front. Can you tell us a little bit more about the scope of the roundtable?
The discussion tonight really. There are four things worth knowing about the Eastern Front. One of them is the scale. It was the largest modern high-tech war fought in history. The second was the level of brutality. For a good part of the war, the pattern of no quarter existed on both sides. Prisoners were maltreated, sometimes deliberately by both sides, sometimes just because the resources weren't there. But the survival rates were extremely low.
So this was a particularly brutal time during
this was a brutal war. Thirdly, we want to keep in mind that that both sides were totalitarian states with totalitarian aims. The Soviet Russia was part of the Grand Alliance, but it was not an embryonic democracy, and I won't insult the audience by describing what Nazi Germany was. And the fourth thing that is worth remembering is that arguably even more than anywhere else in the world, World War II in the East was a total war. The loser was going to be destroyed. The loser was going to disappear ideologically, if not necessarily materially, and very possibly physically, materially as well. There was a German joke that said, enjoy the war, the peace will be horrible. So those four things, if I know it sounds like a bit of a classroom lecture, but if people keep in mind scale, brutality, totalitarian systems, and a war for all the marbles, they've got what they need to structure some really fairly sophisticated reading.
And Professor, you indicated this was a particularly brutal time of the war. Was geography a factor here too?
Geography was a factor. Weather was a factor. I've heard stories from both sides.
Just like Colorado and Minnesota.
Something like that, yes. Except in Minnesota, we don't kill each other with knives and bayonets over a pair of felt boots. And you don't see companies fighting it out with steel for the possession of a village. Because if you use weapons, the village may burn up and everybody freezes to death.
Current generations sometimes don't understand this was a world war.
And again,
it was brutal, and we were all involved.
And there is no such thing as a good war. World War II and the Russian front, you know, plumbs the depths of human behavior, and in many cases, can say as well, rises to the heights of human sacrifice.
And Professor, if you could tell us one more time. The roundtable, where is it and when is it? And
yes, indeed. The roundtable meets the second Thursday of every month from September to May at the Fort Snelling History Center Auditorium. And I think that it's well worth people's time and attention, especially when the snow melts.
Professor, I hope the rest of your stay in Minnesota has good weather and that you enjoy yourself. Thanks for joining us today on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir.
That was Professor Dennis Showalter, a professor of history at Colorado College, who is in town for a World War II history roundtable at the historic Fort Snelling. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining me in the studio today is Anna Lewicki-Long from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Ms. Long, welcome to the show, and what's in the mailbag today?
Thank you. You know, we have actually received several questions from listeners about the half-staff notifications and notices of both the U.S. and the Minnesota flags. Most people know that the current half-staff is due, of course, to the tragic shooting in Arizona. But there's a lot of times when folks might not know why the flags are at half-staff. So it's a great opportunity to tell our listeners and share with them a service that MDVA provides for Minnesotans in general. You can sign up for an email newsletter on our website that sends an automatic notification anytime the flags are set to go to half staff, and that would be either by order of the president or by order of the governor.
So for our listeners that aren't quite sure when they're supposed to do that, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is supplying that information.
Right, and it actually serves two purposes. If you have a flag and you want to be aware and make sure to lower it to half staff, it's a great notification. Or if you're just an interested citizen who wants to know why flags are at half staff, you can be privy to be first on that list. So you certainly don't have to be monitoring or maintaining a flag in order to sign up for that list. And listeners can go to MinnesotaVeteran.org and then select flag status and go from there.
Thank you, Anna. And if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com and let us know what's on your mind. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Major John Dodder from the University of Minnesota, Professor Dennis Showalter from Colorado College, Deputy Commissioner Gil Acevedo from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, the Adjutant General, Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about how the Minnesota Guard is helping fight against drugs. And we have retired Lieutenant General Larry Shelido back on the show, this time in his new position as Minnesota's Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. That's next Sunday morning at 7 right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. If you have questions for our mailbag or if you want to check out our podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.